Walter, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yes, my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Congratulations. This is a very important, it's a very good book, because I think it's you edited it. It's a series of essays that came about in the wake of George Floyd and the illusion of Minneapolis-St. Paul's progressivism. Talk a little bit about how did this book start?
Sure, we'll do. So, as you mentioned in the intro, I was at the University of Minnesota, the U, for 14 years. Got lots of good friends there. They're still there. So after I found out about George Floyd's murder, May 23rd, 2020, and heard about the violence and the unrest, I checked in on folks, make sure everybody was okay. And inevitably, we started having conversations about what was going on. And I had a conversation with a colleague here who used to be in Minnesota, but now she's with me at San Jose State. And she said that Minnesota was wonderful and wretched for black people like us, which made me think, like, oh, that's interesting. So what I decided to do was, hey, let me talk to some other folks who had lived in Minnesota but had moved away to write a series of essays about their experiences when they're in Minnesota, the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. And so we collected 21 essays, 21 people agreed to write something, and we put it on the website called The Society Pages. And that was in the summer of 2020. Then a few months after that, the editors of The Society Pages says, hey, let's try to turn this into a book. So they talked to the publisher of the Minnesota Historical Society Press, and they said, yeah, let's turn these essays into a book. We recruited an additional 24 folks to write essays, and then the thing came out with 36 essays about good and the bad, about life in Minnesota, basically about, as you said, its progressive illusion. It's a lot more complex than meets the eye.
When I saw this book, the first thing I came across my mind was what the former mayor Betsy Hodges said about progressives in Minneapolis.
Yes.
And that right. is, and I'm paraphrasing and not exactly the right exact quote, but she basically said, if I was to go to most people in Minneapolis and say, we need to do low income housing there, the first thing they'll say is, yes, great, let's do it. And then you'll say, we need to do it next to your house. And like, whoa, 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 we can't do that. And,
right.
and I thought that actually encapsulated, I think that there is this idea of false progressivism that is that, the city is progressive because we cheer these things on. But when it comes to that final delivery of the final product, there's a lot of times they just don't follow through.
Yeah, agreed. That's one of the themes that runs through many of the essays in the book, that folks, on the surface, people are really for a lot of these progressive ideas and progressive policies, but when it affects you personally, it's a little harder to follow through, especially for the more structural element. So it's great to host a party in which you read a book, which is great. But like I said, to support low income housing or to defund the police, shift some of the funds to other social services, that's a lot harder to do.
Mm-hmm. It also brings up this other question. It's an internal question I've heard African Americans weigh in on. What would you rather have? Would you rather have Minnesota's, Minnesota nice mentality, where the racism is relatively hidden until it's not? Or would you rather have the South? And I've spent a lot of time in South Carolina and Mississippi and Georgia in my time. And yeah, it's a very much more in your face racism. There's the black grocery store, there's the white grocery store, there's the black church, there's the white church. But at the same time, you know where those lines are at, and it's easier to navigate society. In Minnesota, is it really, is it really that bad that, the progressivism is really just a thin veil over, a nastiness that we just don't want to address?
That's an interesting question, and I think you'd probably get, talk to 50 people, you get 50 different answers, 50 different takes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think my personal take is that there's lots of really good things in Minnesota, a lot of really efforts to make some change, but there's also some folks who want to get in the way. And, just like any other place in the country, you have to learn to navigate the terrain. So I grew up in the South. As you mentioned, it's very different racial climate in Georgia, where I was from. So it took me a while to get used to, how race works in Minnesota. Some of the other essays in the book talk about the same thing. They move from the South, move from the Midwest, other parts of the Midwest, move from the East. Once you get used to the way race works, It's easier to navigate, but wherever you go in the country, there's always going to be racism that you have to face, just no matter what flavor it is.
Walt Jacobs is joining us, the editor for Sparked, George Floyd Racism and the Progressive Illusion. Specifically, I want to bring up a few of the essays here, if you're okay with that. I want to bring up, first of all, it is the one by, let's see here, it's Ibrahim Hirsi, Finding Myself in a Racialized World, The Personal Story of Being Black Immigrant in Minnesota. Now, he in his story, he talks about a god-awful comment that was thrown his way and when he was down in the South Minneapolis area, in Uptown, I believe. But then what he does is he comes back and he points out, overall, I didn't have a bad time. I thought the people were genuine. But then he does a very good job of pointing out, but you cannot deny the fact that systemically, African Americans, blacks in Minneapolis, St. Paul, are much worse off when it comes to specifically salaries, wages, opportunities. These are not mysteries in the sense being that it's unknown. I mean, we can see what's going on. It just is that doesn't get changed. And if you can have that kind of disparity where the white family makes so much more money than the black family, and no one seems to be willing to go out there and address that, well, you're not going to be able to get, I think, to that next level of willing to actually get real change going on.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And one of the reasons we wrote the book was to tell many of the stories about the folks who've had experience with those disparities, to start the conversation. So, you know, as you know, we're in the middle of a historic reckoning about race in our society in the U.S. So that's the main reason we wanted to have these essays out there and people to share their stories. Even though many people themselves, you know, me included, you know, like Ibrahim, I had mostly positive experiences in Minnesota. You know, I really cherish my time. But I know many, many people who had much worse off than us. And like other progressives, you know, it was easy for me to ignore those problems as well. So let's take a look and let's have some conversations about what we can do to change things.
You were at the University of Minnesota, and it brings up a point because, you know, be straightforward. I'm a white guy. I love this book because I think that this book does give, you know, the white population, the progressive population, a real look into saying, no, we really have a lot of work to do here. Right. And I think that that's a very important thing. But it is frustrating to me. I mean, whether it's a building named after someone who really does not have a past which warrants them having a building named after him.
Right.
Or was it Dight Avenue in Minneapolis, where it took forever for us to change it? Or Lake Calhoun being now Bede-Mikaska.
Yes.
You know, it's just, we come up with these things like, okay, John C. Calhoun was a horrible human being. And yet all of a sudden people act as if changing it is something kind of even worse than what that person represents. And I think that is insanity. And to my point is, like, if we can't look at a person and look at their record and say, yeah, that person shouldn't have a lake named after them or a building named after them or a street named after them, that and change it. I think that just shows you how far we still have yet to go.
Indeed, how far we have to go. But at the same time, I'm heartened that we're having those conversations, that change is happening. It's long overdue, but now folks are starting to have the conversations, having the change, and let's keep it going. So that was the main aim of our book, is to get to share these stories and people can see what's going on and maybe do our small part in helping more change come.
I love two other essays, if you don't mind me bringing them up. Sound of the Police, by Jerry Shannon and Sarah Shannon. And I'll start with this one, because these are white people in North Minneapolis. And what their point is that, well, when it comes to serious things, yes, the police seem to be taking them seriously. But when it's, you know, they themselves are noticing crime, they call someone up. The police don't take it very seriously. They end up having to go to their city councilman, and the city councilman has to threaten to take the business license away from the business to clean up things.
Right.
Or the individual, when they say someone broke into their house, and basically they get a bill from the police department for the plywood that they had to put up on the building. I mean, talking about the police specifically as well. It's a great essay because it points out that. That malaise that many people in Minneapolis talk about, the reason why we're having ballot initiatives right now is that the people feel as if, well, the police just aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and it shows.
It does. And I agree. I mean, that was one of my favorite essays, and that was one that was written for the original series about society pages that we included in the book, is to really show the complexities that are involved there. So a lot of times when you think of North Minneapolis, you think, oh, it's only African-American folks there. But, of course, there are white folks there, you know, Hmong folks, Asian-American folks, lots of people there to get this different perspective about how policing looks different for different groups of people and to open some eyes. I also mentioned that one of the things we're really, really excited about for the book is, you know, some of the essays sparked responses.
Yes.
So that one had a response from Jason Mark Soul.
Yeah.
In his one about That's the Sound of the Beast, he talks about his experience with the police from an African-American perspective. So we were really happy that we had, you know, some of the essays were in conversation with each other.
That was the other essay I was going to bring up, the dichotomy of those two essays, where, you know, the one time when the SWAT team shows up at their house and like, oh, white people, you're not the problem. But then what happens in the case of Jason, where he basically is just sitting on a porch. Yeah. And a cop comes up, puts a gun in his face. They throw them in jail for the weekend. He ends up getting fired. Yep. And there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason here. It's right. Now, granted, once again, I think where our eyes are open now, I mean, in these cases of how incompetent the Minneapolis Police Department has been in dealing with the African-American and all minorities, I think, in the city. I think that's pretty much a given at this point. But I think that when you look at this, to put those two essays together, you really see the other side of it very well, that this is, you know, the unjustification, the abusive relationship of the Minneapolis police to the black community on display there, which is just as, and I'm not talking that in the first essay, The Sound of the Police, it's as if they were doing a great job in that one, but they really show how bad they were doing in the other essay. I thought that was exceptional, putting those two in there.
Indeed. And also a third one for folks who are really interested in the issue of policing and, you know, defunding the police, the one that comes right after Jason's article. It's called A Reflection on Racism, Police Violation, and Abolition by Amber Joy Powell. One of the things she talks about is the dilemma that many folks face. You know, do you want, you know, more police? Do you want to better train the police to come in and do a better job of community? Or do you want to just kind of get them out altogether? And again, it's a really complex issue. You know, talk to 50 different people, 50 different takes. But that's another one that folks might want to take a peek at if they're specifically interested in policing and social justice.
You know, it is interesting. Final point I want to make with you, Walt, if I can get your thoughts on this, is that you know, we are at a point now where I think it's fair for us to say, yeah, we need to start looking at slavery as a bad thing. What happened to the Native Americans was truly atrocious. That we have to come to grips with the history of this country. And as well, even in Minneapolis, on a more micro level, you have the ballot initiative from this last election where they're going to replace the police department. That failed. And now you have a bunch of people who, at the idea, and I don't know if it's because they feel regret, remorse, or they just want to shout down the minorities, are feeling as if, no, I like the whitewashed version of history that I've come to believe. Christopher Columbus was a great guy. Native Americans loved the whites. And slavery was not nearly as bad. I mean, you do have this pushback. Can common sense, reality, and integrity push back on this enough to where we can still continue to make change, although incrementally, to the right direction?
I really hope so. I really hope so. You know, we've got January 6th coming up, you know, the one-year anniversary of insanity in Washington, D.C. last year. We've got, I just read about, I think it's in maybe Oklahoma somewhere, but they've introduced a bill to ban the teaching of slavery and that history in college classrooms. So the nice thing about Minnesota is that I don't think we'll ever go that far. I hope that we'll also have these conversations, that they won't be banned in our schools, you know, in our communities. So, you know, I agree with you. It's a tough situation that we're in now. People are yelling at each other versus having these conversations, but I still have faith. I still have hope that we'll be able to make incremental change and keep working towards a more democratic society.
I'm going to make a high recommendation for everyone out there. If you're listening to me right now, get Sparked from Minnesota Historical Society Press. George Floyd, Racism and the Progressive Illusion. It is a wonderful series of essays. It will open your eyes and make you realize that, yeah, Minneapolis, St. Paul might be somewhat progressive, but we have a long way to go to really get equality into our society where it needs to be. Walt Jacobs, one of the editors. Walt, thank you very much. I appreciate this. Congratulations on this. An excellent book. And by all means, if you ever want to come back on my show, you're more than welcome, sir.
Will do. Thank you so much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.